Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. New SkinGuard Sensitive Razor. The first razor of its kind designed to stop irritation on sensitive skin. Gillette, the best a man can get.
And you're welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, Dundalk and Celtic crash out of Europe. Alan Colley will give us his thoughts as Chelsea and Liverpool clash in the Super Cup tonight. Natalia Coyle and her Olympic qualification last weekend. Damien Lawler on Jack O'Connor's appointment with Kildare, plus all things GAA. We've Liam O'McGovern as well, and Wexford season just gone as we start our build up to the All-Ireland hurling final on Sunday. And Dave Keane is going to be in studio along with audio from Aidan O'Brien on the Irish Champions weekend launch at Ballydoyle this morning. 51552 is our text number at Game On 2FM if you want to get in touch on Twitter. And Alan Colley and Liam O'McGovern are with me in studio. How are we doing, lads?
Evening, Hugh.
How are you?
Good to see you both. Good to see you. How's the form, Liam?
Good, yeah. Good, thanks.
Are you looking forward to Sunday, or can you bring yourself to sit down and watch it given what happened in the semi-final?
Yeah, I'll watch it. I certainly won't attend it. I went to the All-Ireland 2013 between Cork and Clare, and I promised myself that day I won't go to an All-Ireland final while I'm playing, because I'm just, there's an envious feel to you that, you know, while you're still playing, that it's not you playing. So
of course, that's totally natural though.
Yeah, well, I suppose this year,
especially this year, yeah,
especially this year, yeah. But I know, look, it's still going to be a fascinating encounter between Tipperary and Kilkenny, and I think for all hurling fans, it's definitely one to look forward to.
Yeah, can't wait. You were at the Hurling for Cancer last night. I saw a load of tweets going today and the photos of it. It seemed like a really good success.
Yeah, I think there were 6,000 people down there.
Was there?
In Newbridge, yeah. So it's grown from strength to strength. I think Jim Bulger and David Russell brought it in 2012. They've almost raised 860,000 for charity. So
it's amazing.
Wow. It's some great work being done. It was a great night. There were young kids around, and you know, people from different sporting fields, from soccer to rugby to racing, and, you know, the likes of Niall Quinn, Ruby Walsh, to be able to rub shoulders with them on a hurling field is, you know, it doesn't happen too often.
I can't picture Ruby without the old hurling thing. I saw a picture of him there, you know. I mean, he looks fit enough, but I'd say if you hit him on the old shoulder, he'd...
I was surprised with his first touch there now.
I know,
maybe with a bit of retirement there over the last 12
months. He's feisty though, Ruby. He's feisty.
Oh, I'd say he'd absolutely pull your teeth out.
He'd nail you now for that comment you said about him.
I know Enda King was working with him up in Santry. He was working on the glutes and the quads, so he built up a bit of strength on him there. Yeah,
good stuff.
It's such a brilliant time though to be doing that, because I think that was only introduced, was it 3 or 4 years ago?
2012, was it?
Yeah, 2012.
And because hurling is riding the crest of a wave, like in the last 4 or 5 years, it's so popular and the games have been amazing. It's a brilliant time to be obviously having the charity as well. And when you think of the money they've raised,
it's phenomenal.
Brendan Cummins and Dame Fitzhenry were in the goal, and they gave an absolute exhibition.
Really, yeah.
It started off where lads were kind of going through the gears. By the end of it, it was flat out trying to score on Brendan Cummins, and he just simply couldn't be beaten.
Are you serious? Still has that quick as a cat.
Very competitive. Couldn't be beaten.
Brilliant. I did see as well, Tony McCoy was there, and he posed for a picture. He said, look, there's very few lads I'd ask for a picture, but Paul McGrath was one of the two boys side by side. I just thought that was class.
Two legends.
Two absolute legends, like, there.
I know legends gets overused, but there's proper legends.
Listen, 100%, yeah. David Goff has been appointed referee for the All-Ireland Football Championship final, although if he's been on Twitter for the last couple of days... He might want to say, no, thanks, you're all right, lads. I don't need this pressure on my shoulders. I mean, look, he lives in Dublin. Obviously, he's from Meath. He's refereed Dublin plenty of times in the past, including changing that decision for the penalty the last time out, wasn't it? As Joe Brawley pointed out today. But the poor lad, I mean, God, before even Eamon Fitzmaurice, I thought that's a bit unnecessary coming out and saying he shouldn't get it. Like,
and you would think he'd know better, Eamon Fitzmaurice, as well, to be stoking the fire. So it was 3 weeks out, and to be suggesting he shouldn't get the final for
this
those
is three
reasons.
Weeks out. Imagine the week before, Liam. Oh, God, the Kerry lads are going to be out to try and get
that
it.
Was terrible.
I think the fact that he's working in Dublin, it's not enough to qualify him out of refereeing.
And he's a very
brilliant.
Good ref.
He's been brilliant.
But the Kerry guys will always find an angle to
exactly. Yeah, and there's been plenty more angles found. I tell you, he's finding an angle in a circle. Those lads. 51552 is our text number, by the way, if you want to ask Liam about the season just gone, or indeed about the final on Sunday. We'll get to that a little bit later on. Dundalk, I know Patrick Coben saying today that they were very disappointed the manner in which they went out. He missed the penalty, which could have given them momentum to go into it. Overall, your thoughts on Dundalk and Europe this season?
It's disappointing, Hugh, obviously. Probably more so in the manner of it, because they were in the game, and they, obviously the opposition albeit they're a decent side, but I don't think they've been anything like what they faced maybe in recent times, and even in the previous round where they were well beaten by Carabag, who were just a step above. But it's just getting more and more difficult now for the Irish teams, and obviously they've increased, it's four rounds now you have to go through to try and get to the group stages. It's just becoming harder and harder, certainly for the smaller nations and especially ours. And I think there's a broader discussion to be had as well, and I know there is a lot of debate around the direction of where the league is going and the formats and this, that and the other, and in terms of investment coming into the league. But it's crying out for investment, Hugh. Like, we're a million miles from the group stages, the clubs here, with in its current form and its current state, in my view. Like, it really is. And that's even with the investment that's gone into Dundalk. They're still so far off the group stages.
And this is, Vinnie Perth was at pains to point out last night that they have been back Dundalk this season in terms of everything that they've asked, they've more or less gotten from their new owners, but even at that, you think the gap is still,
I think it's seismic.
Really?
Yeah, I really do, Hugh. And it pains me to say that, because obviously we've had some recent success in Stephen and Dundalk being the ones, and I know Vinnie and they would have prepared properly, and as he said, the resources in terms of everything they've asked for off the pitch they've received. But it just comes down to the quality of player, and I think another thing it comes down to as well, if you look at the league in its current state also, what the opposition that Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers are facing week in, week out, it's just not gearing them up for anywhere near what they face in Europe. Yeah. Because the step, they're not going up one or two steps. They're going up five steps.
So look, any kind of quantifiable improvement that we're going to see in the standard of League of Ireland is going to take the guts of 10 years. If you start in the next year or two, and hopefully there will be a kind of an impetus for change now on the back of FAI reform, or so-called reform, we wait and see. It's going to take 10 years, isn't it? I mean, to get the players in, to keep them here, to train to the level they're going to be at, and to have regular opposition in the League of Ireland that they're going to have to face to qualify in Europe.
Yeah, because a lot of the debates that break out after the likes of the Dundalk game, or the kind of European little run that whatever club is on, it's always, we kind of nearly try and gauge everything on that kind of isolated fixture in Europe. But I think it boils down to the whole league in general, Hugh. And we need to fix the league before you start fixing what you're doing in Europe. And until the league is fixed, and it's broken, everybody knows it's broken, and it's been broken for a long time. And that's the result of it then, is that when the clubs do get into Europe, and I know it's great for them, and people look at the financial reward, which is great, but the financial reward is getting through around. You want to be breaking into the group stages, and we're miles off it.
Celtic went out last night. Neil Lennon's getting a lot of stick.
And I think that, in fairness, that probably shows you just how far maybe we are off it when you see Celtic struggling as well, and the resources and the money they have behind them.
So what did they win their first two games? 7-0 and 5-2. Yeah. And then they lost the Romanian side last night.
Yeah. And I know Lennon's getting a lot of stick because obviously they sold Tierney the other day, which I felt, he's a brilliant player and he's going to have a great career, but 25 million is an absolute snip.
Yeah,
in the current market. I know it sounds like a lot of money, but in the current market it's a snip because he's a great player. And then they ended up playing Callum McGregor, who was one of their best midfielders, left full last night, which was lunacy. I couldn't believe that when I saw it. They conceded, what was it, 3 goals, and Lennon will be under serious pressure. Now they'll drop into the Europa League, and maybe that's their level as well, Hugh.
Well, maybe so, yeah.
Yeah, and because what would happen then, to go into the Champions League, again, the financial reward is brilliant and it's great.
But they get hammered.
They get hammered.
Yeah. I did see, by the way, Glenn Whelan has signed a 1-year deal with Hearts, just speaking of the SPL. So, you know, 35 years of age, it's a lot of miles on the clock, but he was a free agent. Great to see him still going. Do you think he could do plug a few holes for Mick McCarthy, Republic of Ireland, now that he's keeping playing?
Yeah, and I think in fairness, like, that's the situation we find ourselves in with the national team, that none of the players are playing, bar maybe Seamus Coleman. They're all playing at a lesser level, and now Whelan, who has kind of rejuvenated his career because Mick likes him and wants him involved in the experience that he brings, and he played obviously in the last game. Will he play now? But I think Mick is probably more interested in fellas just playing regularly, and if he's playing regularly for Hearts, he's in with a shout of maybe making the squad.
And I saw Nathan Collins last night, youngest ever captain in the Carabao Cup first round match,
and scored
for Stoke City, and scored.
Yeah, and he has a huge future.
18 years of age.
Yeah, like, that's where we need to be looking at. The likes of him, obviously we saw lads with the under-19s. They're the future, not lads who are going playing a 1-year contract with Hearts. And that's no disrespect to Glenn Whelan. He's been a brilliant servant, as we all know.
Yeah.
But we need to start freshening things up and bringing younger lads through. Now, I suppose the dilemma, that might come under Stephen Kenny's term. The dilemma for Mick McCarthy, as we all know, it's literally a sprint finish to try and get qualified. So maybe he hasn't the time to be bringing in younger lads and bedding them in. He just needs results straight away. But certainly Stephen Kenny will be bringing those lads through.
18 years of age, a captain of Stoke last night. I mean, he must be unbelievably mature for that.
Well, United were in for him as well. United are really keen on him. Like, this young boy is supposed to be the real deal. And again, that goes back to the arguments we have about us not having the players. There's loads of players. It's just them getting the opportunities. And that young fella getting his opportunity at Stoke, that's what you want to see for more of them. Obviously, Ida at Norwich. Afolabi now, who had a brilliant 19s. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. Obafemi at Southampton. There's plenty of players here, but just need the opportunities at club level.
Okay. Joey Carberry, by the way, is... We're hearing 4 to 6 weeks for that ankle injury picked up against Italy over the weekend. He has been included in a kind of a slimmed down, slightly slimmed down Joe Schmidt squad ahead of their next game. And John Cooney, one of the players to miss out. We're going to talk about that tomorrow night with Bernard Jackman in studio. Just a text in on the referee. Absolutely agree with Eamon Fitzmaurice. David Goff should not referee the All-Ireland Final. If he works in Dublin, he cannot be neutral. Plenty of other referees from Connacht or Ulster that could do the job. Umpires and linesmen need to call off the ball instance. Last two games, Sean O'Shea being pulled and dragged needs to be called out. Do you not think he will call it out? Why is working in a county, you know,
he's not working with the players, like,
exactly, and he has refereed Dublin before. So if he's refereed Dublin before, by your logic, he should never referee Dublin if he lives in the county. He is from Meath. He is the best referee in the country, according to an awful lot of people who know more than I do. It's ridiculous to suggest that he can't be impartial and do his job properly. I don't
that
agree with that whatsoever.
Is absolute nonsense.
No, it's not nonsense. It's fair play, but, like, you know,
it's not. It is, like, let's be honest, it's not like he's working with the players or he's training with Dublin. Like, he's happened to be having a career,
yeah,
better than himself and his family with a job here. That just happens to be where he lives.
Are you any more, listen, a Wexford man here working in Dublin, are you any biased towards the Dubs because you work in Dublin?
Maybe a small bit, but no, look at it, I think it's a bit silly, to be honest, where he's working. I mean, it's a small link. What about maybe his parents were from there, or his girlfriend, or his boyfriend, or cousin? You can always find a link to come against
everyone
him, so.
In Ireland.
Exactly.
It's like the six steps of Kevin Bacon. Then I remember that game with the movies. Like, in Ireland, you'll always find someone you know who knows somebody.
Yeah,
like,
everywhere. Yeah, but, like, he should be the best man for the job. And if he's the best man for the job, regardless of where he's from, good luck to him.
Yeah, Damien Lawler, what do you think?
I agree with Liam Hogue. I think it's a non-story. I think he's good enough to do the job. It's not as if he was refereeing the internal and Dublin challenge matches. Probably would have an issue with that, all right, if that was the case. But that is not the case. And no, I think it's a bit of bluster before the match, really. That doesn't make any sense to me at all. I mean, the way Ireland's gone these days, anyway, everybody has somebody in the family who has a foot in Dublin. So if we're to be all judged on interaction with Dublin over the years, it'd be very slim down GAA participation rate, I think. David Goff deserves this, and he'll do a good job on it. And himself and Coldrick and these guys are top of the game, really, and put a huge amount of work into it. So I'm not really sure where the argument is coming from, Hugh.
Yeah, okay, that's fair enough. Right, we'll put that one to bed. So Jack O'Connor is going to take over the Kildare senior football job on a 3-year term, Damien. And a couple of weeks ago, we had to speak because Kildare GAA, the county board, put out a statement saying, look, this is not going to happen. We haven't made up our minds, which was unusual at the time. Well, it turns out he is the manager.
Turns out he is the manager, and they had their minds made up. Like, I was talking to one or two of the players, and they felt that the names of Jack O'Connor and John Sugrue were mentioned on a giant ticket, John Sugrue being the former Laois manager who stepped down recently enough. So it'll be interesting to see if that does materialise. Also, we were wondering who would make the call. Would it be the outgoing chairman or the new chairperson coming in? It turns out that both had an input. When I say both, that the potential candidates coming in had an input into it as well. And I think really what happened was that the news got out there prematurely, too early. I'm not sure if all the candidates who were involved in that process of looking for the job were met and spoken to. So it was put back by a week, but the dogs in the street knew it in Kildare last weekend that that Jack O'Connor was going to be the man. And it's going to be interesting because he brings with him a kicking style of football. He doesn't like to see players soloing, so he's very much against the grain of the modern game at the moment. And you have players like Daniel Flynn, Aaron Masterson. Will these guys come back and commit to Kildare? That's the million-dollar question. He certainly doesn't have the raw materials that he had down in Kerry, whereby he was over under 20 teams in recent years that had minor success. And then when he was there in the earlier reign at the senior, a production line of All-Ireland underage medals coming through. Kildare did win an under-20 All-Ireland title, but that's not to say that all those guys are going to step up. So, for example, the sub goalkeeper will kill there, Aaron O'Neill. Will Jack O'Connor take a punt on him at midfield maybe and try him out the field? He has got to get Daniel Flynn back. He's got to get Aaron Masterson back. Jimmy Hyland, they've got to get the most out of him. Adam Tyrrell had a great year this year. Can he back it up? And I think really and truly it's an exciting project. And over 3 years, I do think he'll make an impact. But like, what can they realistically aim for? Can they win a Leinster title in 3 years with Dublin being the way they are? I would say no, but they can definitely get into the Super 8s. And I think that's where his eyes will lie, and it wouldn't surprise me if they were there sooner rather than later.
And his two sons, Aina and Keane, both play for Moorfields. I was thinking as well, you know, just if you look at Jack O'Connor's history and his management of Kerry, the senior footballers there, Damien, and you question, does he really have the grout to get stuck back into another county? But you wouldn't go back and manage the Kerry minors and then under 20s for the last how many years if you weren't still mad about doing that job?
No, and I thought ultimately he would get another crack at the Kerry senior job, but I suppose Peter Keane's time had come, and who's to say Jack won't take it in the future again anyway. But from what I could see, he was up in Kildare quite a bit with the Suns, taking training sessions with various teams, helping out with Moorfield as well, where the lads are playing. Aina would have been maybe on the Kildare panel, but would have been on the fringes maybe of making a real championship impression. But I presume under his dad, he'll have every opportunity and be given every persuasion to do so too. So look, it's probably a natural enough fit, really. It's a huge coup for Kildare, if I'm being honest with you, because David Burke would have looked for that job. He was the guy that brought Kildare to the under 20 title. I think Glenn Ryan's name was mentioned, and I think that Malachy O'Rourke's name was mentioned as well. Now to come along and get Jack O'Connor, they've had Kieran McGeaney, they've had Keane O'Neill. It's a massive statement from them, in fairness.
Talk to us about Rory McMenamin then, or Royce as he's known, taking over at Fermanagh, because like, we know Rory Gallagher was very defensive minded. We go back to that Donegal match in the Ulster Championship, Damien, and that's how he felt was the best way to set them up in terms of the resources that he had. I wonder, will Royce take a different approach when he takes the reins?
I would say not.
Oh,
you.
God.
I'd say he'd keep the very same approach. And Rory Gallagher stepped down from Fermanagh. It'll be interesting to see where he goes to next. I mean, Monaghan, that job looks to be kind of between Tony McEntee, and he'd be right up there looking for that. Matty McLean's name is in for that as well, the former Cavan manager and Tyrone man. So Rory Gallagher, could he be linked maybe with the Derry job, for example? I don't know what Rory's next move is, but by all accounts, the players are happy enough with Ryan McMenamin. He seems to be the only name in the frame for it at the moment. But no, I would imagine with the culture that he was brought up in and the culture he joined under Gallagher, I think to be a very, very defensive orientated team. And have to say, like, if you are a Fermanagh player and you do want to maybe express yourself, it's going to be probably a tough time if Ricey does get it. But again, I spoke to you on the show a few weeks ago. I put that to the two lads earlier in the season. They were having none of it. They said, the type of player we have, this is the style we play, and we get everything out of them. So a lot of managerial kind of hotscopping up in Ulster at the moment. There's a few jobs up for grabs there. So it'll be interesting to see what does happen. But it does appear that McMenamin is in the loop for the Fermanagh job, and another Tyrone man then, as I say, McLean, he is pushing very hard for the Monaghan job as well. And after Malachy O'Rourke going missing there after an unbelievable stint, I suppose, when I say missing, just stepping aside, It's important for them that they get the right person in too, Hugh. So there's certainly a lot to look out for, and I think all around the country, any of the players who are looking to commit next year, and Liam Ogue probably have an opinion on this, you have to take your break period naturally enough. But you do want to know who's in at the helm, and you do want to see when plans are back in place for pre-season. You want to get at it quickly enough too and see who you have.
Yeah, I mean, look, we were saying off air that nobody knows what Davey's going to do, Liam, in terms of staying on or not. I imagine the players want him to stay on.
Yeah, well, look at it, the last couple of years, the last 3 years, we've got unbelievably competitive, you know, coming from where Wexford have came in the early 2010-11, we've made a lot of ground up, and, you know, the last 3 years have been so enjoyable, we've become competitive again, and I've no doubt we wouldn't have been competitive as we were this year if Davey wasn't at the helm. So I think we're pretty unanimous in terms of the players and the fans want Davey back next year.
Well, the fans, I mean, even like Larry O'Gorman we have on the show a good bit, you know, he has just been their voice almost over the last while, saying how much Davey is lauded and loved for what he's done over the last few years. But it's also pretty obvious when you watch you lads hurl that there's a really good bond right through the dressing, which includes the manager.
Yeah, well, like a bond and a culture like that, it takes time to develop. You know, when you work hard and train very hard and then you start to get results, then the group gets really tight. Just back to Fermanagh there and the teams that maybe aren't performing to a lower level in terms of hurling and football. Getting, and Kildare we mentioned there, getting the right players to actually play for the county is so important. And a lot of the lower teams are actually struggling to get their best players playing. And I think bringing a high profile manager in there creates a level of excitement and gets those good players back into the setup. And that's really important first step in terms of getting the right candidate back in. I know we've got Paul Galvin in ourselves, and you know Wexford football has been struggling for the last number of years, but bringing a high profile manager back in like that has got the county excited again. And it's same with Kildare with Jack O'Connor,
same with Leash as well with Eddie Brennan and what they've done. And even Eddie didn't have the full pick, but the lads were there really bought into him because of what he had done, you know.
Yeah, and it was same with when Davey came in. I mean, he'd won so much with Waterford and Clare and colleges that when he came in, the buzz around the place, everyone wanted to be part of it, and no matter what he said, you were going to invest in it. So you're already off to a good start.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the managers are starting on such a, it's such an advantage, you, if, because we always say the one thing, and even regardless of the sport, whether Gaelic, curling, soccer, unless you have the players on board, you're wasting your time no matter what tactics you have. And the first thing I asked Liam, and I'm sure he gets it everywhere, was, what's he like, Dave? Everyone probably asks. And you could hear it, like, not just his answer there, but even off air, how genuine the feeling was that they all are a fan of him, they all love him, and that transcends then onto the pitch, and you see the performances from it, and it's the same all over. If a manager can get fellas on side, he's half the battle won already.
You know, people talk about Joe Schmidt and the attention to detail that he has on the rugby pitch. I'd nearly throw Davey in with that bracket in terms of how much he eats, sleeps, breathes hurling. Was that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, obsessive is the word.
Is it,
And I think at all a top level, whether it's Joe Smith or Dave Sherlin, all the top coaches, there is an element of obsessiveness there and attention to detail. I remember the first day he came to training, he said that he will be the first one in Wexford every day for training, and he's travelling 2.5 hours, 3 hours from Clare. And it was kind of a challenge put out to the players. Geez, that's okay. You're travelling from Clare and you're still going to be the first. And that has been the case. He arrives at training at 5 o'clock, getting stuff organised to make sure that session is as beneficial as possible for the players. And it's that thoroughness that really, you know, players appreciate, and it makes you really want to invest and commit to a year. I mean, intercounty, there's a big commitment, and when you're putting your time to it, you want to know that it's worthwhile, and you're going to get the best chance of succeeding that year.
Damien, what's the selection dilemma for Tip in the full back line as Liam Sheedy prepares them this weekend? What's the big call he's going to have to make? Do you reckon?
Who marks Colin Fennelly? Okay. And who marks TJ Reid? They're the two ones that stand out for me. I think at the other end, Hugh, it's a case of how can the Tipperary forwards get a bit of space against Kilkenny side that drop back all the various lines through the field against Limerick and choke them and give them no time on the ball whatsoever. So that's one dilemma at one end of the field. But then who takes Fennelly? Because while Colin Fennelly hasn't been shooting the lights out this year, Liam Ogle testified the presence that he has, and he's causing havoc there with his physical presence and his assists when he does get the ball. Also, you don't need me to be pontificating about what TJ Reid has done for hurling the past two or three seasons and the level that he's after finding over the past 3 years especially. So I wonder, will Brendan Maher take him? And I wonder, possibly, will Ronan Maher take Colin Fennelly? Because you've got Seamus Kennedy brought back in there as well, but like, you have to be physical and you have to be a hurler to look after the likes of big Colin Fennelly on the edge of the square.
Absolutely. Listen, I know you're under pressure, Damien. We'll talk to you again next week. Enjoy the final on Sunday.
Okay, guys. Super. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks to me and Damien Lawler there. Yeah, look, 51552 for your text, by the way. A lot of people saying, would you shut up talking about hurling? Well, I might as well, because the two of us have never.
I've got all the football ones right, but I'm struggling with the hurling this year.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll take a break, and I want to come back and talk to Liam about his season in particular as well. We also have Natalia Coyle, and Aidan O'Brien was at the launch of the Irish Champions Weekend this morning. We're going to hear from him, but not just about horse racing, a bit of insight into the man himself.
Text 51552. Game on. Weekdays from 6.
And you're very welcome back. Liam O'Gorman and Alan Cawley with me in studio. Right, can I take you back to 2016 and the first cruise? That was the first cruise, wasn't it, in the summer of 2016?
Yeah, summer 21st of August 2016.
Jeez, you remember the day?
Yeah, club game against Gorey, who are with the club championship. I think it was the last round of the group stages. And I was in the States for about 2 weeks before that at a wedding, just came back, and remember chasing in a ball to go into the full forward line, and did a small little turn, nothing too major, after about 12 minutes, and a sharp pain went the inside of my knee. And I couldn't believe how it came about, how little of a turn that I did on the game. and fell to the ground. The pain was excruciating for about a minute, and shook it off, walked off. I said, I'm fine to play on, and played on for about another minute or two, and then I went to move, and then a sharp pain went. I said, okay, something not amiss here. Got it scanned, and ACL cruciate was gone.
Yeah, I 75% tore mine doing the same thing up in that Pembroke pitch where we play on Wednesday mornings. Just put my foot down, just went a turn,
yeah,
just literally like a right angle turn, and my foot didn't move as much. And just it's just you feel it first of all, but you know, you can feel that you're, that something is not right.
Mm-hmm.
The pain is horrendous though, and mine was only 75. How was the pain for you?
It wasn't excruciating. It was sore, right?
Yeah.
But you know, I've friends that are jockeys and other sports, rugby, and I know some of the injuries you can get in sport, and some of those do sound horrific. It was bad, but it wasn't excruciating.
Okay.
Everyone agrees. Some people do the cruciates; it can be excruciating. Mine was bad without being agonizing.
So what's at the time? Then you know, there's a good bit of, when you find out exactly what you've done, you know, there's a good bit of recovery ahead of you. And you're flying it at this stage. You're playing really well. You were fit. You were sharp. How did you deal with that? How did you feel at the time?
So
Liam Dunne just lost his job. Is that right?
Liam Dunne has lost his job. There was a vacancy in the Wexford. No one was appointed yet for the managerial position. And immediately I said, right, I'm going to do a bit of travelling now. I knew cruciates are 9 to 12 months. I said they're going to take a year off, go travelling. And then Davey got appointment, and then sure, as I said, the excitement around the county, everyone was thinking about how can I get back as quickly as possible and be part of this. Is this Wexford chance to be successful? So I made a choice, and I said I'll try to get back for the following year.
Mm.
And so in fairness, Davey left me up in Dublin through a lot of the rehab stuff myself, with the aim of, if it came right later on the year, that I'd rejoin.
Were you any good at the rehab stuff? Do you mind it? I mean, you can't really be good at it, but do you mind it? Are you one of these people who...
Yeah, I did. You're always paranoid that you're trying to get the most out of that day, and you have to. It wasn't a case of, I was never a big man for the gym. I if you gave me the option, I'd kind of go in and tip around, but this wasn't the case.
I have
around.
Bigger arms than Liam, look.
Yeah, that pink jumper is tight.
You're just hanging around your ankles.
That's 10 to 11 jumper.
Exactly, yeah. 100%. Brave man, isn't he, with a pink jumper saying that?
There's only some of us can get away with this. There's only a few of us.
But no, but in turn, okay, so yeah, you have to do it. It's not a choice here, like, you know.
Yeah, look, if you want to get back, you have to do the work. So it was pretty laid out pretty quickly. If I want to get back, I'm going to have to join the dots the best possible. So
when he took over first, Davey, and obviously you were still injured and you were looking like a long road, did he reach out straight away to you? And
so we had a meeting, I remember, down in Gorey, and I was still part of the panel, right? You know, we were on a break from the county team, so some lads may didn't know at the time that I was fully gone. I kind of kept it to myself, and we went into a meeting, and then I told him or whatever, and he was aware of it. I mean, cruciates are so popular now that he knows the timelines. He pushed the timeline straight away. He said, that'll be 7 months. He's like, geez, I don't know, it'll be 9, Davey. He said, no, it'll be 7. So automatically I was fast tracking the actual calendar months, and I said, okay, I'll be back in April or May. And the actual draw was made in November, and we were playing Kilkenny. Draw, if we got to the Leinster semi-final, we would have been playing Kilkenny in the Leinster semi-final in Wexford Park. And I knew that it'd be a monster day. It'd be 25,000 down in Wexford Park. And I said, I got to make that.
Yeah,
whatever I do, I gotta make that. So that, over the winter months, that was always target in the back of the mind.
Okay, so you do make that. The 11 months on, Kilkenny coming to town, and you're in a warm up match, is it, or a training session before that week? Or
yeah, he brought me on for 5 minutes in the quarter final against Laois. It was like being your first debut again. I was so excited to be brought on, and I was preparing really well. And then we had a 15-on-15 game before the Kilkenny game, and I remember doing the warm up, and it took me about 6 weeks to get anyway sharp. The fitness thing came pretty quickly, but the hurling thing, when you're out for a while, it takes
your touch time, yeah, all that kind of stuff, yeah.
And I remember doing the warm up, and I said, yeah, I have you now, I feel good. This is my chance to really push for a place against Kilkenny the following week. And I was in full forward, and Jack Guiney hit a lovely ball into me. I went to collect it, and a step I do 100 times all the way through my since I was a chap, and I knew straight away it had gone again.
Jeez.
I couldn't believe it. It was like the new ligament wasn't used to that move, if you get me.
Wasn't strong enough.
I'd done that move 100 times, but it's a new ligament that goes into the knee, and that needs to familiarise yourself with the movement patterns, and it was just probably a little bit too soon.
And was it as innocuous as the first time around?
It was a little bit more severe, right, but still it shouldn't have went. And I fell to the ground, and same thing, 45 seconds of pain, and
you knew straight away.
I did. I let a roar out of me. There was nobody, obviously, in Max Park, that they only players, and I kind of went around and nearly the whole ground. It wasn't out of pain, it was more
exasperation, nearly, was it?
Yeah, it was the 9 months of rehab, and I knew that minute that I had another 9 months to go through again, and you're kind of inconsolable. You just want to be on your own to digest what's just happened. And there's always that little bit of hope that it isn't gone. It takes a couple of days to do the scans and stuff, and yeah, sure, the news came through again, and off we go again.
How are you feeling at this stage? I mean, I don't even want to ask you, but to get over to sweat and grind and get back after 11 months, and then you're starting to feel like your touch is coming back, your fitness is back there, Davey's looking to see how you are, and Kilkenny coming to town and you do it again. I mean, can you... You'd be a positive enough person, would you, generally? How did you deal with that?
So my brother and my father had done their cruciates as well, so having that support network around me, my girlfriend as well, was very... having a close support network around you is very important. I'm not lying, when I got the news, I went out to the backyard and I laid in the lawn and I cried for about a half an hour, my face planted straight into the grass. I'll never forget it. But never since then, I never looked back. That was kind of out of system. I knew what had to be done, and I moved on. And again, when you're faced with the idea of not playing again, it'll drive you to a place that you didn't know existed within yourself.
Okay.
So people say, if you were to do it again, would you go back again? You can't really answer that until you're in that situation. So again, it was just a matter of working hard and see what happened.
So that's the primary focus for you, is I need to get back in that Wexford jersey and play again, and everything else doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, I hadn't played for Davey at this stage.
Of course.
And, you know, it was an open communication channel. I'd give it a chance if you come right. And I was just hanging on to that. You know what? The time goes so quick. Mm-hmm. One moment you're going in for surgery, and next moment you're back running again. There's so many little steps along the way. And from the second time to the first, I knew the steps. So the experience of going through it the first time was an advantage. First time you're going into the dark, you don't know what you're getting into, you're paranoid, you're not making these targets. And second time I was a bit more relaxed. I was going to give it the time second time, there was no question of me rushing. So
you probably had to as well, though. You probably had no choice, you had to give it the time.
Well, Santry, where I got the surgery, they told me that it'll take a little bit more time second time around. You have to get a different graft or whatever, and it just takes a little bit more time to knit back in properly.
And when you're recovering from the second time around, because you're out of sight, out of mind, was there any contact from Davey, or was just he leave you to your own devices and it's up to you to show him when you're ready to come back in, if you're ready to come back in?
There was a good trust there between the two of us. Okay. I kind of said, I'm either fully in or I'm kind of fully out of my own devices. I can't kind of go in between limbo land, or you kind of annoy yourself. So I told him, leave me alone for 3 or 4 months, trust me that I'll work hard on my own, and then when it comes to the fitness stage, I'll be amongst the group to build that up. And again, it was slow coming back, and thankfully I started to progress. And you know, in 2017 I got on for the All-Ireland quarter final. I think Paul Morris got injured and I got an opportunity to play against Clare. That was my first day back. It was disappointing, we didn't really perform very well that day, but for myself, just be back on the field was brilliant.
Yeah, massive. And look, the season just gone as well. Like, I was watching, and I sent you a text after the Leinster final, because I was watching out for you and to see how you were going, and just because we'd met at an Aero thing recently enough, and I was just delighted to see you back playing so well, first of all, but then to go on and win that Leinster title. You know, how did you feel beating Kilkenny, Croke Park? It looked like every single one of you enjoyed it to the end.
I think we stayed on the field till about 7 o'clock, and the stewards came out to us and said, lads, you have to go, we've to go home to our families. We really made the most of it. We hadn't won a Leinster title in 15 years. I think 2004 was the last time we won it, and we've had a couple of tough days since then. I mean, 2015 I got beaten by Kilkenny by 28 points. Tough defeats to get over, but that's what makes it all the more sweeter when you eventually land it. That whole journey, it makes it extra sweet.
Yeah, no, brilliant. And it's been a great summer. I know, obviously, disappointment in the semi-final, but has it given you the confidence as a squad? And hopefully that means Davey coming back next year, waiting to see what he decides, that, you know, you guys should be aiming for the All-Ireland here. I mean, that has to be the target.
Yeah, well, look, it was incredibly disappointing not beating Tipperary, not getting over the line. I mean, the feeling we got after a Leinster final, I can only imagine what it was like winning an All-Ireland, and to be so close.
Yeah.
Look, it's tough, and even seeing the build up to the final now, you just wish it was you and Wexford preparing for it. But look, it wasn't to be. We weren't good enough on the day. And
are you over it yet?
Am I over it? It's getting easier.
But you say you weren't good enough on the day. I mean, That's not necessarily true, is it? I mean, you were good enough. Just for whatever reason, the last few minutes, it just slipped away from you.
But for whatever reason, we still didn't do it. Okay. Whether that was experience, whether it was whatever factor you look at, we didn't get over the line at the end of the day. And I've analysed it and I've gone back over it, and you know, you'd be beating yourself up over what he's done differently. But I think you got to give Tipperary a hell of a lot of credit. They were down to 14 men, 5 points down. They'd done a lot of good stuff as well, and you know,
was there any suggestion, because I know a lot of the narrative around it and we discussed it here, that when he went 5 points up, was it a case of this is it, we have it, fella switching off?
Larry O'Gorman did say on the show that he just thought that some of the heads just went missing when they should have been more composed.
I don't know, it just happened so quick. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's a 70 minute game and All-Ireland semi-final, it's over in 10 or 15 minutes in your head. Like, sending off, it's not something I thought about. It's a jizz, they're down to 14 men now,
you're just carrying on
next ball. I don't know. They got a bit of a run. The momentum was with them. You're on the ropes. It's very difficult to say. It's been said numerous times over the last couple of weeks that down to 40 men, it galvanises teams. Maybe that, you know, an opposition's down to 40 men, maybe you drop it 1 or 2%, and if that's across the whole team, well then you're down 20%.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
Had you discussed prior, because you know in the way teams went in preparation, now we've covered every angle, did you discuss if they did go down to 40 men?
Well, we'd played against teams throughout the year that had been sent off and how you would discuss it, and there's just so many things to take into consideration on the day of a game, and 62,000 people, maybe it was a lack of experience with 10-15 minutes to go, and you know, Tipperary, I think, had been in, some of those players had been in 5 or 6 All-Ireland semi-finals. It was our first one. People were saying that to me before the game, and I was like, oh, experience, what about it? But maybe that was an element with 10, 15 minutes to go.
It's fair that you give Tipperary credit as well.
No, like, absolutely. Yeah, look, we'll get your thoughts on Sunday before the end of the show. I want to take a very quick break, though. We've got Natalia Cole coming up.
Text 51552. Game on. Weekdays from 6.
And you're very welcome back. Okay, I'm delighted to say we have Natalia Cole on the line after she qualified for the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo, finishing 8th place at the European Modern Pentathlon Championships over the weekend. Natalia, you're welcome.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
And congratulations. You must be delighted.
Yeah, I'm really delighted, over the moon. It was great. It's so good to have something like that in your pocket.
And your third Olympic Games coming up.
I know.
You're getting greedy now, Natalia, at this stage. But look, listen, okay, take you back to the European Championships then over the weekend. You finished in 8th place, as I said, overall. And you said that you kind of made a bit of a slow, nervy start to the fencing first out. Why was that, do you think?
The whole weekend I was feeling quite nervous, just because it's a lot of pressure, because this is our continental qualifier. So you can obviously qualify straight from, through it to the Olympics. So I was quite nervous going in, because we've been building up to this for the whole year, and I knew that I needed a good competition, not the best competition, but a pretty solid one. And I started off the fencing with a little bit too much pressure, I think, and it wasn't great at the very, very start. But about halfway through, my dad likes to credit himself, because he came wandering back in after having a break, and I won about 6 or 8 fights in a row. So he likes to say that he turned it around for me, but you know, I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, because you ended up winning 21 of the 35 bouts, and that pushed you up to 6th overall in the leaderboard. So I'm just wondering, you know, okay, let's take your dag out of her for a second. Was there some stage where you just said, all right, Natalia, you got to step back here. This is not how you can perform, and you need to just fix something here.
Yeah, like at the start, it just took me a couple of fights. I was a little bit nervous, kind of a little bit cagey. And then I took a little bit frustration. And then I was just kind of able to take a little bit of a step back, talk to my fencing coach. And, you know, he was just saying, like, there is nothing really wrong. You're just a bit tense, basically. I was just a bit worried. I wasn't really kind of just flowing like I normally do.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of able to take a little bit of a breather at that point, and then kind of, you know, turn around and just reevaluate. And then I won some pretty nice hits in a row, and that always gives you a bit of confidence.
And anybody who's done any kind of sport where you need to relax yourself, whether that's hitting a tennis shot or even Lee Moog here trying to poke a ball over the bar, darts, snooker, if you're in any way tense and you need to be precise, they almost work in direct opposition to each other. Is that right?
Yeah, they definitely do, especially as, like, I kept, you know, you can think about in fencing as well, like, it's very, very, fencing's weighted quite highly, so you do need to fence quite well to finish well at the end of the day. So you can really kind of get drawn into this whole kind of thought process of, oh, well, I've lost two in a row here. If I lose any more, that's really going to be detrimental for the end of the day.
Yeah.
But then I suppose if you flip that around, if you win two in a row, it could really just change the whole day as well. So winning six in a row really turned it around for me. And then I only lost a few more after that as well. So it makes you feel pretty good coming towards the end of fencing.
So the horse riding went quite well as well, and you were in a reasonable enough position going into the laser run. Were you confident enough? And also, I'm curious as to how much you think you've improved in the laser run, say, versus go back to Rio 2016 over the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, like I had a good horse ride and there was a lot of carnage in the horse riding as well. So it was great to kind of, it moved me up a couple of spots in the leaderboard and a lot of people actually away from me, which is great.
Mm.
And then I knew in the laser run, for me, the whole thing about Europeans was, yes, it would have been lovely to win a medal, but for me, it was the Olympic qualification spot. So we were looking at the people who were all around me who could maybe take the spot away from me or kind of just move in front of me.
Okay.
So I knew that I had a little bit of kind of a gap to the people that were going to possibly be hunting me down. So I knew that I needed to have a really solid combined. And yeah, I've definitely got better at the combined as I go along. I definitely was quite nervous going into it because I knew I needed to shoot quite solidly. And my first two shoots were very good. And then my next two weren't. And I remember in the last series coming into my final run, and I only had one more to go, and I missed that like twice in a row. And you know, the thoughts do start to come creeping towards you, but then you got to kind of try and shut them down.
And there's a balance there, isn't there, between, you know, analysing, you know, you've got to actually keep an eye on your standing and overall and in terms of qualification, but you don't want to over analyse the opposition and what they might be able to do. So the balance there between concentrating on your own performance while also being aware of what's around you, if you get me.
Yeah, definitely. It's not even because you just got to run your own race anyway, but it's also kind of, I suppose, it takes a little bit of pressure off you. When I knew that there was a good few girls who were kind of coming towards me, that didn't affect my qualification process. So, you know, I knew that a British girl overtook me at the maybe last 50 metres, but there was already two British people in front of me and only one of them could have gone. So I knew that that didn't, you know, impact my Olympic qualification. So those sort of things can kind of help you a little bit. Now, it's obviously not always like that in competition, but just the Europeans was just a little bit different this year round.
And it must be a relief almost to have qualified so early, Natalia. I mean, I know there are other ways and means to get there, but for you as well to have, you have a good year in preparation now ahead of Tokyo. Must be pretty good.
Yeah, it's really, like, I've never, you know, I've been to two games before and I've never done it this way before. I have qualified through the rankings, so it's really nice to have this kind of done and know that, like, looking towards next year means I can really plan specifically for the Olympics instead of specifically going to lots of different competitions for points. So I'm on a break now, and we'll be setting our plan in stone now for the next year and next coming days and just kind of gearing up. And it's just really nice to know that I can kind of focus on my weaknesses for a little bit longer as well, and making them more of strengths instead of just kind of thinking, oh, I have another competition I need to peak for.
So what are those weaknesses, if you don't mind me asking?
So I suppose I just need to, maybe there'll be some weaknesses in my shooting.
Okay.
And then I'll do a lot more horse riding over the winter as well to make sure that I keep that up to date. And just the whole package really as well, because in pentathlon, you really just got to be an all-round fit athlete. And if the fencing takes an awful lot out of you, it can really affect your run. So I'll be looking at different ways of kind of making sure that that doesn't really impact me in the Olympic Games.
And so, I know you train out at the National Sports Campus as well. I'm just wondering, mm-hmm. because there's so many different skills and athletes across different disciplines as well. I'm wondering, how much have you learned from just being a part of that atmosphere over the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's really, really good. It, you know, and sport can be a very lonely thing, and it's so nice that when you can walk into the Sport Institute, that, you know, there's so many other athletes there from all different sports, and that's really, really cool. Like, you know, we can train in the gym with so many different athletes, like Rashida, who's athletics,
yeah.
And she's quite young, and then you can train with other athletes who've been with you to an Olympic Games before. So it kind of gives you a different perspective on things. It kind of can make training even more interesting.
Arthur Lanigan O'Keefe, I know he put up a Twitter post as well. He just no luck at all. He was injured through the last part of his final round as well. He finished 25th in the men's individual final. He's going to have to go the long road to qualify. Would he be hopeful and confident that he could do that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, definitely would be confident that he's a great athlete, and you know, he hasn't had a great season this year, and it was actually very good that he could make the final. So he's just trying to repair up now for next season, and you know, very confident that, like, he was ranked third in the world last year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's not an issue. It's just about, unfortunately, you know yourself, elite sport can be tough at times, and especially with injuries and things like that.
Okay, well, listen, we wish him the best, but from yourself, as I said, like, you've got a whole year out now to go and prepare, and medal's got to be the target, Natalia. Sixth in the world, I think, ranked about 2 weeks ago. So is the medal a target here?
Yeah, well, I've always said, like, each games I've gone to so far that I want to do better than the last, and I came ninth in London and then sixth in Rio. So, you know, rate of progression here.
Yeah, exactly. No, brilliant. Look, it's a fantastic achievement, and we'll talk to you a bit well before the Olympics in Tokyo 2020. Thanks so much for making the time for us.
Cool. Thanks a million, guys, so, for having
thanks
me
a lot. Nice one. Natalia Coyle there, yeah. So another Irish Olympian. Bound for Tokyo. It's a year away. It's mad. I just keep saying that it doesn't seem that all that long ago that we were over in Rio. Right, 51552 is our text number. A lot of texts coming in on the David Goff football hurling.
All from Kerry.
Well, actually, well, here's just a typical one. I don't understand how you think Goff reffing the All-Ireland final isn't an issue. He lives and works in Dublin, chairs the Cumann and Munskull. Why not give the game to Patrick O'Sullivan and see how Dublin react? Leave GA wide open for criticism, in my opinion, James. And yes, I'm from Kerry. Well, there you go.
Maybe I was a bit harsh earlier on, Hugh, and there may be an argument, but I don't know. You would like to think the integrity of David Goff and all would be fine, absolutely fine. I'd have no issue whatsoever. Maybe, like, some of the arguments are coming in saying, what if it was kind of, where was the one about, what if David Goff lived and worked in Kerry? Would the Dubs kick up the same kind of...
Yeah, but David Goff is from Meath. Meath hate the Dubs more than anybody else.
That was another text.
Tommy Rogers as well says, you'd want an earmuffs on you with all the noise coming out of the kingdom. Embarrassing at this stage. Well, there you go. Like, listen, we've got three more weeks of this, okay?
Hopefully that puts it to bed now that he got named and that's the end of it.
Dave Keane, you're welcome. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
What was Ballydoyle like this morning with 50 or 60 invited guests down for Irish Champions Weekend?
It's like Christmas morning, you know?
Yeah.
Bit of magic. I suppose we're used to it from the point of view that you go down and you go through the drill and you see the horses and you see them doing their routine canters. But I've never in all my years going down there seen any horses work.
Okay.
Because when you go in, they canter up the wood chip and they do their routine canter. But we saw the horses working today, and that was.
You put a video magical up on Twitter, which for anybody who hasn't seen it, we're going to retweet it from the Game On account, but it's magical doing a bit of work, and you were sitting in the front seat beside Aidan O'Brien as she's galloping along at full stretch. I mean, it's just phenomenal to see. I showed it to the lads before we came in there.
Yeah, I suppose it puts it into perspective as to what these horses do every day.
Yeah.
And we kind of take it for granted, and we kind of don't really see this. As I said, you'd see them doing the routine canters, but to see a filly like her, and I suppose if Enable wasn't around, she'd be the best filly about at the moment.
Mm.
And to see her doing her thing today. Peter Maloney was in the Jeep as well, and his dad is Martin Maloney, the famous jockey in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And Peter was there and his chin was on the ground, and Peter said that was as big a thrill as he's ever gotten in racing.
Just to see.
So for him to say that, that said it all, you know.
And to see the pace as well that the truck is going and that she is going as well, and just when she got a little squeeze, she just took off.
Yeah. My one reservation, thing that I was a little bit annoyed about, that I didn't look down and see how fast she was going.
Yeah, but what do you reckon roughly?
She probably was going about 40 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, easily. Maybe. Easily. You know?
But it felt like that in the Jeep anyway.
Yeah, no, incredible. It's an operation. You just sometimes... You wonder how Aidan O'Brien keeps track of everything, because there's so many horses between the juveniles and obviously the more experienced as well. But... Champions Weekend, he's a huge fan of it. I mean, it's a brilliant initiative, by the way, by HRI, for anyone who's been looking to go the last couple of years. And he's got some superstars who are going to line up this year.
Yeah, magical. She's going to run probably in the Champion Stakes.
Yeah.
Maybe Japan. Hermos is going to rock up in the Matron Stakes. A few of these are going to go to York next week. And
okay.
Then York will sort them out. But basically, all of the principal Irish horses will feature that weekend.
Yeah.
And the international horses will travel as well.
Which is great.
They travel because the prize money is good. And like, we all love sport, and we all love to see the best taking on the best. And that weekend, you do see the best taking on the best. Like Roaring Lion, he won the race last year. Kind of, I don't know whether it'd be fair to say he kick-started Ushin Murphy's career.
Yeah.
He won the Champion Stakes last year. Great success for him. And he's kind of followed on from that. But like Frankie's won it. Yeah. All the greats have won the Champion Stakes, but it's a kind of a Dublin day out in Leopardstown on the Saturday evening, and then you're rocking down to the Curragh.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to dilute the racing, but I think the Champions race that they've staged now, where McCoy's coming out of retirement, Ruby, Joseph, Charlie Swan,
they're incredible.
They're there for the
going head to
race for cancer alongside the Group 1.
Liam Oakes' cousin is Jamie Codds, who people will know, the master of bumpers, and of course the brilliant win on Envoy LN as well in Cheltenham last year. And I'm excited to see what he can do over hurdles. But I just want to play a clip about Aidan O'Brien. Maybe the Aidan O'Brien that we don't get to hear so often. We're speaking to Dave today, and he got a few minutes on your own with him, and you asked him outside of racing, first of all, to talk about Shane Lowry and his recent win at the Open Championship. This is what he had to say.
Oh no, absolutely we were. No, listen, it was unbelievable, special for everybody, and listen, for everybody working day in, day out, and to have that to look forward to, and to appreciate the man when he's there. Obviously he's an unbelievably talented fella, and a lovely fella at that, which is great. Very close to everybody's heart, and I think it was incredible for us all, and incredible for him and his family and everybody involved, really.
And do you still take an interest in Manchester United and the soccer side of things?
We do. We watch all the soccer. We watch the GAA, and we watch all the sports, really. And I think sport is so important to every human being, because it gives everybody a little bit of an escape in their mind. They can go there, something to look forward to when you're sitting down watching the telly, or if you get a chance to go to those matches and to read about the people and the players and to see them. And I think it's mentally, I think it's so important for everyone, sport, and for spectators as well.
And do you ever get to see them live?
Not much, I don't. No, obviously I don't get much time. But like I like love watching them on telly. Like obviously when we get time, it's kind of only hours at a time you get. And like you wouldn't have the time rarely to get to, you'd have to take a morning off to go to the most of those things, and we wouldn't be able to do that. But we would look forward to the afternoon being able to watch it. And then yeah, that's a little bit of an escape for a few hours.
And Sunday, of course, it's All-Ireland Sunday. You're training in Tipperary. Your son is training at Kilkenny. You're a Wexford man. You obviously follow the game pretty closely. How do you think it's going to go?
I know. Sure, listen, it's really unbelievable, really. It's obviously, there's great rivalry here between Tipperary and Kilkenny, and like two great teams, great people involved in them and managing them and controlling them. And I think everyone gets such a kick out of it. I think it's so good. Like, obviously, it's very, very hard one to call, but it's going to be some match.
It's great to hear him just express the interest in other sports, because we know that he eats, lives, sleeps, breathes horse racing, as Davey does with the hurling, but he does have a fairly general knowledge as well about other sports.
As he said, it's great escapism for him. But the thing about racing is, and Liam would know, that effectively racing 7 days a week. You get the odd Sunday off.
So the horses need attention every day, like.
Well, if you're looking after them, but if you're going racing on top of that, so he has to look after them, and then you're going racing on top of that, and we get the odd Sunday off. So it is, you know, it's a very all-encompassing game. There is very little time out, but it was kind of nice to ask him these kind of things about, you know, what interests do you have outside of racing?
Yeah.
And I knew that he had an interest in Man U, and obviously then with Shane, and he just follows sports, you know. I just think he just loves sport. He just loves a bit of live action.
It's the way he carries himself here. We've said it numerous times, but he's just so classy, and the whole family, everyone,
whole family are Joseph,
Donegal, just like, it's and it can be overstated at times, like, and people might think, oh, you're only saying that and you're close to the race and whatever. He's unbelievable, like the operation that he's running, yet he still has time for everybody in the whole place. Like, it's amazing.
Chairman and Manu just texted in saying there was an argument made by Johnny Mullen in the Racing Post some time ago that the Saturday card for Leopardstown should swap with the Curragh Sunday card. Definitely agree, more Group 1s in Leopardstown. Granted, Leopardstown was always on a Saturday, but is a discussion still? Yeah, I can see the merits in it. I mean, it is what it is at the moment.
I'm from Dublin, and I'm living in Meath over 20 years, which is great from a football point of view. But Saturday was always, excuse me, the evening that the Dubs went out.
Yeah.
And Sunday was the day that people from the country went out. So I think they actually have the balance right.
Yeah.
The key is trying to get the right prize money, and the right prize money will get the right horses there. Mm-hmm. And when you have Aidan saying, I'm going to stack the deck here, I'm going to bring as many of my good horses as I can.
Brilliant.
Godolphin are going to bring their horses over, you know, a couple of French horses. To me, it's all about sport and trying to capture the magic of sport and capture a bit of competition. And I'd encourage people who wouldn't even have an interest in it. Yeah. I love hurling, and I love going to see it when I can. But this is an opportunity for people to go and see the best compete.
Absolutely. That's brilliant. You're into your horses. You have to be, really, don't you?
Yeah, and just on the Champions weekend, it's a great weekend. I haven't got to go up the last couple of years because I generally have Club Championship on that weekend. But I remember, I think, 2009, See the Stars. He was the best 3-year-old in the world at the time. And it was really, I was there occasion to see him, I think Fame and Glory and Mastercraft, man, they're round at the bend and see the stars Mick kick up and win six.
Yeah.
It was really unbelievable, and as I said, he was the best 3-year-old in the world, and to be there that day and Dublin to watch him was special.
Yeah, I'm going up Leopardstown on Saturday, I'm definitely going to be there. I might even drag you with me, we might have an old pint or two.
No doubt I'll be there.
I heard your tips weren't too good in the last
No,
day,
listen, Dave, don't never ask me for tips, you know that. The only ones I give are dead.
Only go racing with you for the crack.
Yeah, exactly.
Forget about
don't expect to win money. Right, okay, we have a final 30-second ad. Dave, thanks so much for that. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
And
thank
yeah,
you.
Champions Weekend, highly recommended this year. Go along the Curragh on the Sunday and Leopardstown on the Saturday. Andrew O'Connor produced tonight. Annie DePere is the BCO. Lee Moog, have a great rest of the club season. And we talk again soon.
Thanks, you.
Man. Cheers.
Thank you.
Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 6.